Today's daf in Masechet Yevamot brought to you from Eretz HaKedesh is daf Samach Beit. We're holding on Samach Aleph Amud Beit, and we're one line up from the bottom. Beit Shammai Omrim Shnei Zecharim. So yesterday we got into the mitzvah of Piriyah V'Rivyah, and we found in the Mishnah Machloket between Beit Shammai and Beit Hillel as to what constitutes to being Yotzei the Chiev of Piriyah V'Rivyah. So Beit Shammai says two males, and Beit Hillel says a male and a female. And Beit Hillel offers us his explanation of where he gets this from, and he says, I get it from Briat HaOlam. It says beferish in the Pasuk, Zachar Nekeva Bar'am. Therefore, that means that HaKadosh Baruch Hu, in terms of his own period of Arivya Kavayachol, used a male and a female. So therefore, everyone is Mechuyev to have that same creativity, to start a world, so to speak. My time, I would debate Shammai. So where does Beit Shammai come off with saying that two Zecharim are what you need in order to be Mekayim, the mitzvah? Yalfinan mi Moshe, tekhtib b'nei Moshe Gershom ve'Eliezer. So since Moshe Rabbeinu seemed to have been satisfied with having two sons, and he didn't get married again because he was Parish b'nei Ishan, so apparently, if he was happy, I forgot to record here. If he was happy, says Beit Shammai, if it's good enough for Moses, then it's good enough for me. So, I mean, I think we can rely on Moshe Rabbeinu's psak, no? So it seems like a very good basis. Ubeit Hillel, Yafina mi Briyato shel Olam. Don't you think that it makes more sense to learn it out of my Bereishis? Indeed, why wouldn't Beit Shammai be lufi mi briyato shel olam, which is the primary definition in which HaKadosh Baruch Hu creates male and female? It says pru revu, which is mashma, you guys do the same thing. Ein danin efshar mishi efshar. What does that have to do with it? HaKadosh Baruch Hu didn't have much of a choice, did he? I mean, if you don't have a male and a female, so then you're not going to get very far in terms of reproduction. If the mitzvah is pru revu, you have to start with a male and a female. But, I mean, right now, there seem to be plenty of females around. So why shouldn't I learn it from Moshe? Because those males are going to ultimately be capable of reproduction. It's not my business to see to it that they're females necessarily. And therefore, I can't learn it out from Briyato shel Olam. Briyato shel Olam is a special case. Ubeit Hillel, nami lilfi mi Moshe. Why, according to Beit Hillel, don't we learn from Moshe Rabbeinu? Isn't he good enough? Wait a minute. On the contrary, if anything is a special case, it's Moshe was a special case. Because remember that Moshe even made that determination that he is not actually supposed to have relations with a woman. He made that diyuk himself, and he was Parish Menaish, and HaKadosh Baruch Hu was maskim to him. If you recall, we've had this whole sugi before in Masechet Shabbat. The Tanya. Shlosha dvarim asa Moshe midaato v'iskima daato ledaat hamakom. So we learned that there were three things that Moshe Rabbeinu did on his own, and it turned out that HaKadosh Baruch Hu had that in mind, because in the end we see that HaKadosh Baruch Hu expresses his approval. So one thing was, and that's what's nogei over here, Piresh bin Aisha. So he stopped relating to his wife. She bare haluchot, and then when he came down with the luchot rishonim, he broke them. V'yosif yom echad. And he also added one day to the days of the hafrashah of Yisrael ben Anashim. So HaKadosh Baruch Hu told him, U'kidashtem hayom u'machar. And he said, Hayu nechonim l'shloshet yamim. So he apparently added one additional day. And we'll go through these cases. And therefore, that was his own drasha, and he couldn't have any more children because of that drasha. So, Piresh min Aisha. Let's take them one by one. The first thing he did on his own was that he was Piresh min Aisha. And what was his basis for doing such a thing? Piresh min Aisha, my darash. Amar, Uma Yisrael shelo dibra imayam shechina, ela lefisha'a v'kavalem zman. Nonetheless, Amra tera al tikshu elisha, ani. So here we see a rather strange kavachomer. As Tosis points out, it seems to be a kavachomer pircha, just the opposite. But what he said was like this. Let's read the words. So if he says, if we find that when HaKadosh Baruch Hu came to speak to Klal Yisrael, and it was a one-time event, and he defined when that event took place, and nonetheless, he was koveya with them that they have to prepare and they're not allowed to have relations with a woman in order to prepare for that event. So I, who am in a position of not being able to really live my own life at any moment, HaKadosh Baruch Hu could come and speak to me. And therefore, for sure, I should always be in a state of preparation. So isn't it obvious that that's what's going to be? I don't know who keeps trying to call me here. So therefore, he was Purish. Now, as Tosis points out, if anything, it's the exact opposite. I have to turn off the phone. Because of the very fact that he has an appointment is a reason why we should actually not, correct? After all, if I have an appointment, so over there, it makes sense. I'll do everything that I need to do for the appointment and we'll be koveya that zman. And now you know that 3 days before, you don't relate to a woman, you're going to be speaking to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and so on and so forth. What are you going to say? Because maybe there's a chance that HaKadosh Baruch Hu will speak to you today, so therefore you should be Parish Ben Ayisha. What kind of kavachomer is that? Doesn't make any sense at all. Therefore, Tosis explains that the inyan is like this. Mi'ikar hadin, remember, the only issue that was problematic of requiring 3 days of hachana was the fact that we were choshesh for plitat shechvat zara. In other words, the only real issue over here is that we don't want a person to come directly from a tumah of having slept with a woman, which is betamiyam, is a balkari. So therefore, he should not be a balkari. Not to be a balkari does not require 3 days of preparation. So what requires 3 days of preparation? The fact that if someone had slept with a woman and there was leakage of semen, so since sperm is actually able to survive for 72 hours, so we needed 72 hours in order to make sure that there would be no tumah at Kabbalah Satara. But that, as Tosis points out, is completely a suffix, right? And then it's okay because of the outside chance that somebody is going to be polite shechvas zera. So because of that, we needed 3 days of preparation for this one-time event. So for me, I have a suffix at every moment that it would be a real moment in which I'm in the middle of intercourse and all of a sudden HaKadosh Baruch Hu calls me, which is what happened with the story with Aaron and Miriam, just to prove to them how embarrassing such a situation is. Or certainly it could be on a day in which I would be tameh as a balkari. So over there, it's a much more primary suffix. I have a suffix about the ikar din. Therefore, he made that kal v'chomer. Now, that's how Tosfos understands the kal v'chomer. But in any event, the bottom line is that was the reason that he didn't have any more children. So how can you learn from there that that's supposed to be koveya, the halacha, about how many children a person is supposed to have? That doesn't follow in the least. So therefore, and so you'll say, okay, but maybe that's wrong. No, piskima da'atole da'tamakom. We know that HaKadosh Baruch Hu, in the end, actually agreed with him, because it says, lech emor lehem, shuv lechem lo alechem. Here it says that HaKadosh Baruch Hu said, you go tell Klal Yisrael to go back to your tents, meaning to your wife. V'ata po amodim adi, mashenken, when it comes to you, you should remain up here with me, which is clearly in context saying, do not go back to your wife, which is exactly what Moshe had determined on his own, that must be the reality. Fine, so therefore, how can I learn from Moshe Rabbeinu? What are the things that he do on his own? Shibera taluchot, my dorash, what made him break the luchas? Amar, uma pesach shu echad mishesh meot v'shlosh esrei mitzvot abra Torah, ko benechar lo yochal bo. If just for the involvement in the Korban Pesach, which is only one of the 613 mitzvahs, and which provides a gateway, an entry into being a member of Yisrael, right? So it's this primal identification. And you cannot have that identification if you are in a state in which you are rejecting mitzvah. So that's Kol B'Nechad. I mean, somebody whose slave was Makir HaKadosh Baruch Hu, it's not completely shalom in his heart. So now we're going to give you the whole Torah, which is the entire gateway. I'm throwing the whole thing at you, and you're ready now to be fully involved and a complete member of the Bechiras Yisrael, and we have Klal Yisrael in a state of mumrim, the whole thing is outrageous. I mean, it's the worst possible thing to do because it's completely inappropriate, and this is not the Torah that was meant, and this is not the bris that was meant to be entered into, and to do it in this way would be just a tragedy. So how can I allow such thing to happen? So because of that, he breaks the luchos. And we know that HaKadosh Baruch Hu was masking with him, because when HaKadosh Baruch Hu says to Moshe, "Psolach hashnei luchot avanim karishonim, v'katavti al haluchot et hadvarim asher hayu al haluchot harishonim asher shibarta." I mean, obviously asher shibarta. The point over here, asher shibarta, is to tell me, I am pointing out to you that I'm being me'asher sheshibarta. Yasher kol chacha sheshibarta. Yeah, I'm happy with that. So let's do something now with this. Whew, take the place of those first luchos that you got rid of for me. Whew, that's a good thing, right? So that's the entire context of it. This beautiful medrash that we darshan the Yasher kol chacha sheshibarta, because, says the medrash, that Yoshua and all of Sanhedrin and the Zakenim and everybody saw that Moshe Rabbeinu had come down, was ready to bust the luchos, and they're all holding his hand down. And no, don't break those luchos. And Moshe was stronger than all of them put together. That's the Yasher Kochacha. HaKadosh Baruch Hu was Mosif Kocho, that he was able to break those luchos. That's the Raya, that it was HaKadosh Baruch Hu's Haskama. You just imagine the scene. How incredible medrash. So that's the remez of the Yasher Kochacha, literally. It's not like we say today, you know, oh, very good, you know. No, it literally had to have a hand wrestle in order to be able to break the luchas. Okay, so that's the Yasher Kochacha. The Omar Resh Lakish, Amar HaKadosh Baruch Hu L'Moshe Yasher Kochacha Shishibata. And now what was the third thing? He added an additional day, which HaKadosh Baruch Hu said, Mikidashtem hayom umachar, mashma, only 2 days. So where did he come off saying liyom ha-shlishi? That should be shloshes yamim. The shloshes yamim was by darash. He said, well, since it says Mikidashtem hayom umachar, so hayom umachar means that HaKadosh Baruch Hu is telling me to compare hayom like machar. So just like machar is a complete 24 hours, it starts in the evening. Ma machar lelo imo. So then the day that is the first day can't be today that he's saying it, because this day is already half gone. We lost the night of this day, so it won't be Hayom U'Machar. So therefore, it must mean that there have to be 2 whole days. Fine. So we do 2 whole days, and then on the third of the whole days, maybe Yom HaShlishi, the third of the whole days, that's when HaKadosh Baruch Hu came to give us the luchos. So ma machar lelo imo, hafayom lelo imo. And since the night of this day, Laila da'idna, already is lost, not fakla, must mean, therefore, said Moshe to himself, shma mina, trei yume levar miha idna. There must be 2 days besides today. How do we know HaKadosh Baruch Hu was of that opinion, and that in thinking this way, he was maskim ledat hamakom? Because that's when the Shekhinah showed up. If he had been wrong, the Shekhinah would have showed up on Friday, not on Shabbos. The Lo Sharya Shekhinah at Shabbat. Tanya. Now, we have other opinions about what the Machlokes Beit Shammai and Beit Hillel is. According to Rabbi Natan, Beit Shammai did not say 2 Zicharim. Beit Shammai said 2 Zicharim plus 2 Nidkevot. It was Beit Hillel who said Zachar v'Nekeva. Now that, obviously, we're going to have to find a mocker for. Where would you get the idea that there need to be 2 males and 2 females? Omer Rabbi Huna, I'll tell you where he learns it from. My time at Rabbi Natan, Alibi de Beit Shammai. Well, we see that Vatosef laledet et achiv et heva. So now, when Chava has an additional brother, et, so we have et Kain and et Heva. So et Achiv, et Heva. Remember that et is a riboy, something that is secondary to, which must have meant that there were twins in each one of these cases, and there was a female born with Kain and a female born with Heva, and that gives us male, female, male, female. Now you say, okay, but how do I mean, this is a story of what was. It's not a story of what needs to be, is it? It is, because afterwards, when Chava has a chase, so she says, Ki shat li Elohim zera acher tachat eva ki yorago kayin. You see that she believes that in order for her to have been b'kayim, that mitzvah, or it's that which defines her, is that HaKadosh Baruch Hu has replaced the missing one. So obviously that missing one required replacement. So that's what she's saying. HaKadosh Baruch Hu replaced him. What do you mean? Tachat. I mean, why is it tachat? I had another child. What is she, some kind of, she wants to maim psychologically her child, but he should always be, she should always know he's just taking the place of my dear child. I mean, what kind of nonsense is that? But that's the point. La halacha, he was the one who took the place of the chiyav, and therefore is the tachat. Okay, so you see, says Beit Hillel according to this. It says Beit Shammai according to this. Shnei zecharim or shnei nekevot. That must be the reason. Giora gokayin. V'rabbanan. V'rabbanan say, no, she was, I mean, maybe she's just oduyu with the komodis. Maybe she's on a personal level. She's being moda to HaKadosh Baruch Hu for the additional child, and that his first chesed to her, that he's being memale, that chesed. How do you know that it means that this is what the halacha demands? So they don't want to bring a raya from there. This is the other approach to either Beit Hillel, the way he learns, why we can't bring a raya from here, or the other way that Beit Shammai was learning. Now there's yet a fourth opinion, which is the Tanya Yidach Rabbi Natan Omer Beit Shammai Omerim Zachar V'Nekiva Beit Hillel Omerim O Zachar O Nekiva. According to this approach, Beit Hillel says that it's only necessary to have a single male or female in order to be Yotzei Piri Verivia. Remember that when we say Yotzei Piri Verivia, what we mean obviously is, although there's so much discussion of this among the Achronim, particularly in the Minchas Chinuch, who has pages and pages and pages on this mitzvah, the first mitzvah, period of Arivia, because there are so many problems we're going to see in the Gemara here. But I mean, the basic problem is, how can you have a mitzvah to have children? You can't have a mitzvah to have children because it's not in your hands to have children. And certainly, what do you mean? You have a mitzvah to have a male and a female? I mean, like, what is this talking about? Genetic manipulation? I mean, it's up to me to have a male and a female. I mean, whatever the good Lord gives me, right? But obviously, the real point over here is that the question is, up until what point? That's what the Mishnah is saying. Up until what point must a person be Isaac mi Ikra Din in Piri Verivia? That's how the Mishnah introduced it. Up until the point that he has a male and a female, according to Beit Hillel, or two males, according to Beit Shammai. So that would mean that this is a ptur in the Esek in Piri Verivia. It is not a question of whether you were Yotzei your mitzvah. That's not the point. It can be Yotzei a mitzvah that's not in your hands to be Yotzei. Fine. But in any event, where would Beit Hillel come up with the idea that we can ignore Moshe, we can ignore Briyas HaOlam, and we can ignore the story of Chava and Cain and Hevel? I mean, like, what's the basis of saying just one? That according to this, either a male or a female, you have a child that potters you from Piri Verivia. That, Beis Hillel, is semech on the pasuk in Yeshayahu. Because what it says over there is, Ko Amar Hashem Borei HaShamayim. This is going all the way back to Ma'aseh Bereishit. So there, Hu Elohim Yotzer HaAretz Va'oseh Uchonena. Lo tohu v'ra'a l'shevet yitzara, the Hashem, you know, this is a very powerful tzibui, that when I create the world, I created it in order for it to be settled, the shevet yitzara. Okay, fine. I did my share in that. I contributed to the settling of the earth. And where does it say that you need more than that? If this is the way that HaKadosh Baruch Hu expresses his rotzen in the Bria, is l'shevet yitzara, then that ought to as well define until what extent there's the chiyav to be oseg in Piri Verivia. Now, before we discuss this, let's look at the next sugya, which is offers us a very rich information that we can look into in terms of understanding the chiyav here. Itma, huyulo banim behayoto avet kochavim v'nitgayer. This is a fascinating question. Somebody had children as a goy. And then is mitgayer? Is he yotze? Now, when I say yotze, that's a very misleading lashon. Again, is he potter from Piria Verivia because of the fact that he has children? Now, remember that if indeed we were talking about being yotze a mitzvah, you can't be yotze a mitzvah when you're a goy. That makes no sense at all. But again, since the whole point over here is that Piria Verivia is a chiev that you only have in the event that you don't have children. In other words, once you have these children, so then you're potter from Piria Verivia. Not because you were yotze, but because that's the trigger for the chiev. So the trigger for the chiev is not there for you. So there's no chiev. You already have children. So now the question is, the children that you had as a goy, albeit were not part of the kiyum of the mitzvah of Piria Verivia, but they are there. And didn't we just bring a raya, according to the way Rabbi Nosson was learning Aliba de Beit Hillel, didn't we just bring a raya that the way to understand Piria Verivia is in the context of Shevet? Well, I mean, I definitely added to the settling of the world, didn't I? I had those children, whether it was as a mitzvah or not, but those biological children exist and the earth is thus settled. So Rabbi Yochanan says he was mikayem Piria Verivia, meaning that there's no additional chiyuv of Piria Verivia and it's sufficient. So even though, as Stozis points out, I mean, normally we say ger shenitgayer ki katan shenoladami. So then why in the world would you be able to potty yourself for such a thing? So apparently the reality is that these are children and that's all that counts. He was able to be Mekayim in the sense of having that biological reality. You think that that's what it means. And we're soon going to see that it's much more complex than that. But let's take that for granted for a moment. So according to Rabbi Yochanan, he was Mekayim Piria Verivia. Reish Lakish says, no. Rabbi Yochanan says, of course he was. Does he have kids or does he not have kids? Don't give me this stuff. If those kids exist, so then that cancels Piria Verivia. He now is not over that catalyst that is b'chai of him to continue to try to have children. Reish Lakish says, no. Loki and Piria Verivia, because ger shenit gayer k'katan shenoladami. Now this ger is like a different person. And therefore, since he was just born, I mean, as being just born, then he would need to be Osik in Piria Verivia, wouldn't he? So why does that change based on a different life that he had as a goy? That was a different life. The Azdulatamai. Now, we know that this shitas of Rabbi Yochanan and Reish Lakish have a different application, and it's perfectly consistent with the way they're learning here, the Itmar. Now, here is another question. This man had additional children after he became a Jew. Is his firstborn a Bechor? Or he can't have a firstborn who's a Bechor because he already had children. So how could we possibly call this his firstborn? Ki hu reishit ono. And remember that ono specifically is a reference to his reproductive ability. So it's not reshit ono, and therefore it should not be a bechor. Rabbi Yochanan says, then he doesn't have a bechor lenachala, because he already had reshit ono as a goy. So this was his vigor, this was his vitality, and this was his own, his sexual prowess. Reish Lakish amar, yesh lo bechor lenachala. Those children were not his. Gershinit Gayer, Kikatan Shinolad Dami. Now you think, well, isn't that just repetitive? I mean, it's the same machloket exactly, is it? No, not necessarily. I'll tell you why not. Because there's another element that we need to consider over here. Vitzricha. The Yashmina Bahika Maita. Let's say we would just know vis-a-vis the Chiev of Piria Verivia, but not what the opinions were about whether he has a Bechor. I would say to myself, you know, what Rabbi Yochanan says makes sense, because basically when the human race was told, it was said to B'nai Noach, some question about whether the pasuk of Pru Urvu, pasuk that we're saying here, Pru Urvu, is what was said to Noach when it came out of the table. The question about whether that first pru urvu that appears early in the Torah, in Maisa Bereishis, is considered to be a mitzvah is machlokas v'shoinu. So the Ramban learns that pru urvu is entirely in terms of bracha, not in terms of tzivoy. And the tzivoy for pru urvu actually comes with the tzivoy to Noach. But in any event, this pru urvu that we're quoting over here is pru urvu that's said to Noach. And therefore, it makes sense for Rabbi Yochanan to say, well, I mean, those words were said to all humankind. And therefore, why would he not be able to use those children that were a response to that primal pru urvu? They exist, and therefore, the fact that the mitzvah was mikuyam in the sense that it passively ends up being mikuyam. It isn't a function of whether I was mikayam the mitzvah, but the mitzvah is definitely there. The children are there. Maybe that's why Rabbi Yochanan insisted that it would be a actual kiyam. But she'inkein legabe nachala, what are you going to say? That I will consider those first children my firstborn? Maybe not, because there is no din of nachala in terms of his life as a goy. Now, that doesn't mean that there's no din of nachala. Of course, there's a din of nachala for goyim, as we're going to see. But what it means is that there's no din of a bechor lenachala. There's no din of pishnayim. There's none of the dinim of nachala that a girl doesn't inherit. A girl does inherit. There's no difference between a boy and a girl and between a bechor and a poshet. So those dinim of nachala are foreign to his state as a goy and therefore should not have any impact on the status of his bechor after he became a Jew. That's what I would have thought. So I need to know that Rabbi Yochanan, even in this case, insists that the children as a goy are considered to be in every way, including Reshit Ono, even though obviously it doesn't give them a din of Bechor, but it means that there cannot be a different Reshit Ono. So that's a Chiddush. So I needed to know both of these machlokas. And if I only would have known this latter machlokas about the Bechor, I would have said, yes, well, perhaps Resh Lakish is only saying his opinion here, because it really makes sense that since there is no din of nachala in the concept of bechora, but maybe as per the Iker question, yes or no, in terms of Piria Verivia, are these children Turim from Piria Verivia for him or not? Maybe in that Rish Lakish would have gone along with Rabbi Yochanan, and he would have accepted Rabbi Yochanan. So, and therefore, I need both machlokas. Now, Rabbi Yochanan points out to Resh Lakish, "Be'etahi shalach baradach baladan ben baladan melach bavel." So, the question is, it does say over here that here we've got their goyim, right, and we're considering them. No. So we see from here, so we have this whole beautiful story that that Baladan ben Baladan, who was the Melech of Bavel, sends this letter to Chizkiyo, and he heard all about this Maizu with Chizkiyo, and we see over here that the Torah calls the son of a goy, and it is specifically his son. So the point over here is that it appears that indeed there's a concept of an ongoing relationship of father to son, which is part of the Piria Verivia concept. Says Resh Lakish, well, of course there is. Did I ever say there isn't? While he was a goy, yes. I said that a ger is a katan shenayla. I said he's somebody else. Did I ever say anything about the relationship of goyim to the concept of Piria Verivia? I never said a word. While he was a goy, of course, itlu chayis, he has a continued genealogy, father, son. All I said was that once he became a ger, at that point, they no longer have any real ties that would consider these to be their children and therefore to be a ptur for them from Piria Verivia. That's all I said. Omar Rav, well, that's an interesting point, because the truth is that everybody would be made, including Rabbi Yochanan, if we were talking about an Eved over here. For sure, an Eved does not have any kind of genealogical continuity when it comes to this din of Piri Averivi. We're only talking about Goyim, not Avonim, because we know that from Shvula Chempo Ima Chamor, which we understand to mean that Im implies the double meaning that it's also together with. It's an Am that is Doma L'Chamor. So then that means that we are comparing them to donkeys. And donkeys, we don't have any sense of a genealogy. And therefore, the Eved Kenani does not have any genealogy, in which case we wouldn't view the child as being a p'tur for this person's period of Arivia. Oh, now, wait a minute. I could show you a case in which the Torah says beferish that an Eved has children. Now look, Tziva was basically an Eved Knani, right? He was an Eved Knani to Beit Sha'ul. So it says over here he had 15 sons. I mean, so it calls them sons. So obviously the Torah say they're his sons. When it says Par ben Bakar lechatat, it means he has a son. It means that there's a child. That doesn't mean he has a son. So there's a par ben bakar. So there's a ben to Tziva, who is the par, you know, who is the bakar, and he's got a par. What does that show about having this context of Piri Averivia in terms of offspring? Well, now, wait a minute. I mean, if then we could say the same thing is true of Borodach Baladan ben Baladan. I mean, maybe it just means par ben bakar. No, obviously not. Then how does it have a name? But the Torah is going to identify, you know, bring Dolly, the daughter of, I mean, what's the normal name for bulls? I forgot what they call the bull. It's usually Bill, maybe. I think they call Bill bulls. Yes, whatever. Sir. I forget all my heritage. You see what happens in old age. But anyway, would you really think that the Torah would sit there and talk about, you know, the name of the cow? When it's a par ben bakar, if you're talking about Baladan ben Baladan, then you're talking about a relationship between father and son. So over there, Shaini Hatab de Achsino Bishmayo Bishma de Avuan, it uses the name, it uses the father names. Mashenkin, in the case of Tziva, doesn't say anything about names, it just says he had sons. Vahacha lo mifaresh, so there's a big difference. Or I can even say a stronger right. You know what? Ibois Ema. We find that the Torah even gives us generations, genealogical information, because Yachsinu Beduchta, there's other places where we find Beduchta Achrite with the father and who's the grandfather. That only makes sense if we're talking about a sense of genealogical continuity. Dichtiv Vayishlachem HaMelech Asa El Ben Hadad Ben Tavrimon Ben Chezion Melech Arama. What in the world is all of that? What do we care about his father and his grandfather? That's the point, that these people have a real history, a genealogical history. If they have a genealogical history, then that means that those children follow in the sense of Piri Averivia. Okay, gentlemen, what the heck is going on over here? I mean, first of all, let's understand from the beginning. The sugya is here because it is obviously so profoundly connected to the concept of Yibum. In other words, the idea of providing replacement for an ongoing world is what Yibum is all about. The idea of the Benot Lot, who thought there was nobody to get the world going, and therefore they needed Yibum in order to be Mekayim the Olam. So there seems to be crossover issues over here between Kiyum HaOlam and between Kiyum of an individual. I mean, on the one hand, we're talking about Shevet, right? Shevet simply means Kiyum HaOlam. On the other hand, we're saying, even if you had a kid, if that kid is not mityaches after you, so then what? What's it have to do with me? I thought we're interested in Shevet. You said Yeshlo. So now all of a sudden, you're introducing the issue, does it follow my name? Does it go according to the grandfather's name? What does that have to do with it? If you're learning out from Briata Olam, so then what you seem to be saying is that each individual carries a chiyuv to essentially create the world as if there was nothing else that was here. We have to go and take care of it, right? It's Beit Shammai who argues on that and says, no, we've got lots of women around, which of course is also insane. Paro made that same mistake. Exactly the same. What do we need the girls for? There's plenty of girls. Let's get rid of the men. And he says, let's get extra men. What good is men for reproduction? We don't even need men for reproduction. So what the heck is going on over here? The whole thing is crazy. You're telling me Prue or Vu is served by having additional males? You need one sperm bank for males. What do we need? We need all of these sperm banks walking around the earth. They don't do any good. What we should say is, if the Torah is interested in there being more children, then we should only be Yotze Dechiev if we have females. Instead, he says, no, well, what do we need females for? There's lots of females. What good are lots of females? So what are these men are not doing a darn thing in terms of Torah Varivya? Something is extremely strange about the assumptions. I mean, when Paro did that, the Medrash laughs at him. Paro, somebody's got to teach you about the birds and the bees. I mean, if you're worried about the Yisrael population, you know, you're after the wrong sex over here. What are you killing the males for? So, I mean, the whole thing just does not seem to make any sense. So if what we're talking about is the reality of universal survival, and this whole discussion does not seem to make any sense whatsoever. What does universal survival have to do with being mityaches after you? But note the same thing comes up with Yibum. What are we looking for in Yibum? The crazy thing that the Torah speaks about, Hashem Achiv, on the name. The name? What does the name have to do with it? And in fact, in the end, we do not have to use the name. That was a very misleading pasuk, as it turns out. As the Gemara points out, that the meaning of that pasuk is very different than what it seems to be saying. Yakum Hashem Achiv Amet. But we do know from there that there must be Yichus. And if the deceased brother has children from a Goya or from a Shivcha, that it's not considered to fulfill the need for Yibum, even though if he had a Mamzer, it would fulfill the Chiyuv of Yibum. So how do these two things actually relate? On the one hand, we're talking about the personal Yichus, as if that means more than Par Ben Bakar, so that we're talking about your need to perpetuate a world of your own. Would have your name attached to it. That's an astounding assertion. You can see exactly, I mean, the implications, the moral implications of such a thing are dramatic. And indeed, the next issue brings up another problem that we have in Yibum, which is the presence of grandchildren or great-grandchildren without children. So we know from the pasuk of Ayin ben Enlo, which we learned out before, Ayenalev, see if there is any surviving Zera to that individual, the deceased brother, and then there's a Petur of Yibum. How does that play a role in Piria Verivia? So suppose there is surviving children, maybe two generations later, I don't know. So was that individual Yotze? He had children, the children died. They have children. Are their children enough to potter him from continued Asik and Piria Verivia? Or must it be his children that survive? And in fact, does it have to be survive? Maybe the mitzvah just is that there should be children. Why do they have to survive? Well, when it came to Yibum, they had to survive. And over there was a question of Ben Enlo at the time of his death. Ben Einlo. And we're going to see that this is an extremely important issue when it comes to Lag BaOmer. Because according to this sugya, we have a completely wrong understanding of the nature of Sfiras HaOmer, as we're about to find out. So all of these questions end up being nogea, the time of the year, exactly, as we'll see. So now let's talk about what the din is if children die. So itma. Yulo banim umeitu. Suppose children died in his lifetime. Says Ravuna, well, what's the problem? I mean, lamaisa, this person was mekayim a mitzvah. So why would he need to have additional children if he already had the ptur of having those same two children? Rabbi Yochanan said, no. What we're talking about is a ptur so long, it's not a kiyum, it's simply a ptur. If the children are alive, so then you are currently in a state of not requiring a second period of Arivia. If the children are not alive, it's the same thing as Yibam. So now there is a chiyuv to see to it that there is a continuum of genealogical, for some reason, not just biological. We need to be able to have the genealogical connection, which is a completely different issue than just the fact of something being alive. Rav Huna says, Kiyem, he says, look, the whole idea over here, I think what you guys are thinking about period of Arivia, and that is that we're talking about an ongoing continuum. I disagree. I don't think that that's the point at all. I think that the point is that there are a certain number of human variations of information that the Torah, HaKadosh Baruch Hu, created the world. And when he says lo tohu v'ra'a, obviously he does not mean in an entropic universe to be discussing a forever story about some little planet somewhere, but a joke. So then what are you talking about, L'shevet Yitzhara? Ah, so there must be a definition of how many seasons this play is meant to go on. But every one of those seasons is like a new show. Okay, so we have a certain amount of information that could be called new human information. And that's why we're interested, by the way, in the males. That's why it's not the fact of life. We're interested in variety, whereas essentially what women do is they attempt to keep things in the flow of biology. We're not interested in the flow of biology, surprisingly, when it comes to period of Arivia, which you think is exactly what we're interested in. So it's quite shocking in and of itself. But what I say, says Rav Huna, is that we have a Makor that teaches us that essentially we need to view creation as a single individual in a sense, that has all of these variations that we see as different human beings, and we need to use them up. And this is what Rav Asi pointed out. The Omer Rav Asi, Ein ben David ba ad sheyichlu kol nishamot shebaguf. Now, we are used to the idea of a human being providing a particular embodiment to information that we call a human being. And we call the embodiment a body. But the truth is that all human beings are incorporated in an embodiment, which is the creation. That's their embodiment, right? So we call that container the primal goof. That's the body. Now, as long as we end up using all of that information up, then we can basically conclude the story with the lovely trumpet calls of Mashiach and so on and so forth. But do not expect to get any kind of curtain calls until the body has been completed. And therefore, it's as it says in the Pasuk, Ki ruach milafanai ya'atov. So I, that ruach is not stama ruach, that is a ruach of the ruach of geula itself. That's what ruach always means. So that is now coming to me, and it's nishamot ani asiti. So it's saying, even if it's ya'atov, if it's late, remember, atufim lelavan, if it's late, that's just because we're waiting for those nishamot that I made. And if we don't get those nishamot, then things are going to be late. Things will be delayed. So over here, did you use up one of those? Yes, you used up. Thank you. How many nishamot did you use up? Whatever. Are they still alive? What's the difference? They were used up. Okay, next, please. So that's all that I'm concerned about. Whereas Rabbi Yochanan says, no, you are not Mekayim period of Arivia because you need to have Shevet. And if that child is not alive, so then it's not inhabiting the world. And where's the Shevet? Vahaleka. So therefore, you will not be Yotze on that level. That's the Gemara, Akasha, on Rav Huna. It says over here, B'nei Banim Arein Kepanim. So grandchildren are the same as children, which seems to be saying that if children are no longer around, you are still going to be putter for period of Arivia because the grandchildren can take the place of children. But you do need to have taking a place, right? So you see that you're not Yotze just because you once had a child. Says Rav Huna, you know what that's talking about? That's talking about, let's say you only had one child, right? And then that child, let's say you had a son. And then that son has a daughter. So then that's telling you that that son's daughter can be mashlim, your need to produce a male and a female. That's what it means. Meisvet. But that's not really true. Because it says in this brisa, b'nei banim, arein kebanim, meit echad meihem, if one of the children dies, here it says beferish, or if one of those, even more amazing, if one of those children is sterile, so then that means he's not going to be part of the ongoing procreation, which is part of the chi of a piri of arivya. Lo kiyem piri of arivya. Straight out, man, there's no way for Avuna to argue on this. It says that just the fact that a child lived and used up one of those neshamas that registered on the neshama clicking device over there, that is not what piri of arivya is about. So this is a tiyufta, the Avuna. Yes, indeed, it is a tiyufta. Now, b'nei banim, let's look at that. B'nei banim areim kabanim. So Abaye thought that what that means is that let's say if a son dies and that son had a grandson for you, that son had a son, or a daughter dies and that daughter had a daughter, or for that matter, for sure, if she had a son, because we've already seen, that would be okay. And we could take the place of the deceased child. But a daughter to a son cannot take the place of the deceased son. Omar le Rava, why not? L'shevet yitzara ba'ayava ika. If the point is that we're saying that the reason that we need to have a living child is in order to be out to the chiyuv of shevet, then shevet should be absolutely the same, whether it's male or female. Okay, but everybody certainly seems to be meida that you cannot have two children from one child and be yotze the mitzvah and say, well, I already had two children because my son had his own two children, right? That's not good enough. That's what you're saying. Is that true? The Amalei Rabbanan Reb Sheshes says, why don't you get married and be yotze your chiyev? He only had a daughter. He didn't have any sons, Reb Sheshes. So Reb Sheshes said to them, my grandchildren, those are my sons. My daughter has boys. That's good enough for my sons. So you see that he holds not like that. Nah. Reb Sheshes couldn't have children. That was because of those long shiurim of Ravuna. Remember we had that story? If you need to urinate and you don't want to walk out of shiur because the Rebbe is just dragging on and on and on, then you could actually become sterile. That's what happened to poor Reb Sheshes. He never walked out of shiur. And because of that, he couldn't have any more children. Well, he didn't want to say that. So he said, my grandchildren are my children. But Lamaisa, it was those long shiurim that finally did him in. Okay, turns out they have found no better contraceptive than coming to those long shiurim. Amazing story. Okay, but in any event, he didn't really mean that la'alocha. Omar le rabba le rabba bar mori. Minam yil tadam rabba. How do we know that b'nei banim are kevanim? How do we know that you could take a son of a daughter and view that son as your own child? Maybe because Lavan said to Yaakov, look, habanot penotai, habanim vanai. So apparently he's talking about all of Yaakov's children. He sees them as his own, and they are the sons of his daughters. So apparently they're his own. Right, and when he says, and the sheep are my sheep, what does he mean there? He means the sheep are his own sheep too? I mean, Ochanami, obviously there's no din of the genealogy when it comes to the sheep. Ella, what he's saying is, look, everything that you got over here, you got because you got it through me. You got these kids through me. You got these sheep through me. That's all he's saying is the kanitami noi, fine. So if that's what he's saying about the sheep, then that's what he's saying about the kids. You got these daughters because they were mine. I'll tell you where it says it. It's a raya from the strange pasuk of Divrei Hayom. It says like this. V'achar bo chetzron el bat machir avi gilad v'teled lo et seguv. Now, so Chetzron comes along. He marries with the father of Gilad, who is machir. And we have in the pasuk, mini machir yardu mechokakim. Then we find Vora singing about Mini Machir, calls Machir as Mechokakim. But how is Machir Mechokakim, since it says Beferish that Yehuda is called the Mechokek. And in order for there to be Mechokekim, it needs to come from Shevet Yehuda. Like, that's the Mechokek Mibein Raglav. That's all about Yehuda. So how could the Mechokekim have come from Machir, who is from Menashe? The only way that it could be is that we're counting the children of the daughter to go back to Yehuda, because indeed Chetzron was from Yehuda. So then that means he married the family of Chetzron by taking the daughter of Chetzron, and that means that the son of the daughter of Chetzron is called his grandson, because it says Mini Machir. And that was Yotze Lechiyev to be from Yehuda Mechokeki. So that means we trace him back to Yehuda as if they were his own children. So you see from there that the children of a daughter are considered to be your own children. As the Rosh Yeshiva always used to tell me, Rav Ruderman, this was his sugya. He only had a daughter, but nonetheless. Fine. So anyway, so then that means that if you do have children, then you don't need to be Osek Kapira V'Rib. That's the bottom line in the Mishnah. But that is not true according to Rabbi Yeshua. The whole Mishnah is the local Rabbi Yeshua, the Tanakh. Rabbi Yeshua Omer Nasa Adam Isha B'Yalduto Yisa Isha B'Ziknuto. If a man married a woman while he was young and she's no longer alive, he should remarry. Yulo Banim B'Yalduto. If he had children when he was young, Yulo Banim B'Ziknuto. He should have children when he's old. Shenemar Baboker Zerad Zarecha V'La Erev Al Tanach Yadecha. You never know which of these children are going to be the ones that make it in the world. And therefore, you may actually need both of them in order to have either of them survive. And because of that, you should always be sowing your seeds. Rabbi Akiva says this has a different application. It also means a person who has learned a lot of Torah as a child. You should learn Torah in your old age as well, because you should also have talmidim in your old age from the same pasuk. Baboker zrad zarecha, the same thing. You can't say you've already given over your Torah and so on. Maybe you need this new Torah. Maybe you need these new talmidim. And in fact, Amru, Shneim Asar Elab Zugim Talmidim Ayula L'Rabbi Akiva. This is the famous Gemara that he had 12,000 talmidim that were chavrutzas. It's 24,000 talmidim. Migavad Ad Anti Paris. So they had all of them died. Kula Meitu B'Perek Echad Mipnei Shelo Nagu Kavod Zelazah. V'haya Ha'olam Shamim. Ad Shebar Rabbi Akiva Etzer Rabotenu Shebedarom V'Shina Alahem. Until at the end of his life, he had these Talmidim, Rabbi Meir, Rabbi Yehuda, Rabbi Yossi, Rabbi Shimon, Rabbi Elozer ben Shamua, and Heimem Shemidu Torah Botasha. They were the basis of Torah at that time. So you see that it's the same idea. You never know which one is going to be the success. Tana Kula Meitu Mi Pesach Vadat Seret. All of these Talmidim died between Pesach and Shavuos. And Omer B'chama Bar Abba, some say it was Rabbi Bar Avin, Kulam metu mitara'a. They died a very bitter and tough death. Mahi, Amrim Nachman, Askara. So Askara is considered to be something that it's a terrible thing. It makes it impossible to breathe. It's not clear precisely because it's supposed to begin. People usually call it diphtheria, but it begins at the B'nai Me'ayim, it says, and it works. Okay, whatever it is, it's a horrible way to die from lack of oxygen, very similar to the COVID deaths and the way that they describe the horrors of COVID, which of course we always compare to these same in Yanu. But, okay, so you see that he says that you still have to have children. Omer of Mazda, indeed, halacha k'Rabbi Yoshua, that's the way we paskin, and that if possible, a person should continue to have children towards the end. Now, the reason I say that this completely revises our understanding of the Yemei Svirat HaOmer is, do you not see that it's clear from this Gemara that Svirat HaOmer is not because of the death of the Talmidim of Rabbi Akiva? The whole point of the Gemara is that Rabbi Akiva is relating the Hoyulo Talmidav B'Yaldusai, Yelo Talmidav B'Ziknusai, because he never knows which ones are going to survive. The story is about Rabbi Akiva. It's not about Rabbi Akiva's students. if Rabbi, the whole story that we had before, the question is the child that dies. The child that dies is the person Yotze, if he has a grandchild, that's only when the person is still living, this whole discussion. The whole discussion of Rabbi Akiva is only because Rabbi Akiva is alive. So what Rabbi Akiva is saying, the fact that a person is alive doesn't mean that he's done anything. He has to continue to live his life in crescendo, so to speak. You're constantly investing and doing new, amazing things. And this is the story of Rabbi Akiva himself. Okay, well, what does that have to do with the death of his Talmidim? You mean just Agav? Agav, we're learning out from here that, oh, there was a terrible tragedy and that 12,000 Talmidim die, and so on. Oh. So it definitely seems to be strongly focused in terms of the entire sugya. I mean, it's not just the words. The words, mainly you could do whatever you want with. But the whole sugya is focused on a completely different vision of the Torah being the Torah of Rabbi Akiva that was lost and reconstituted by the Talmidim Shehayu B'Ziknusei. And it was the possibility of the loss of Rabbi Akiva and everything that he had taught. And that was the issue, in which case the issue is again would mean that it is not focused on Shalah Nagut Kovet Zebezeh, that the entire period is there to teach us to be Noye Kovet Zebezeh because we're supposed to be making up for the loss of the time. Nothing to do with that. That's your own jumping to conclusions, because that's not what the Gemara is talking about. And it's not clear that that was the issue. The issue was how it was affecting Rabbi Akiva and how it reflected on Rabbi Akiva, just as the death of the children of the individual that is going to be made up by his grandchildren is not the story of the children and the grandchildren. It's the story of that person. So this requires a very serious rethinking, I think. I mean, you know, unless you feel that the idea is, since that's the way it happened, that that's the only thing that we're supposed to be focused on. Because obviously, la halacha, we do take into consideration the days in which they died. The only title over here is that that is because of the impact on Rabbi Akiva. Okay, let's think about it. But anyway, I'm sure that you've enjoyed some of the issues that have raised the interrelationship of Piri of Arivia to Yibum, personal worlds versus universal worlds, question of how genealogy and Yichus plays a role in shame and why it is that a person has to have a name of a world that's his own that needs to be able to be traced back. And here we get into Yerusha again, just like we had Yerusha when it came to Yibum. Even though Yerusha seems to have absolutely nothing to do with Shevet, so why would it require Yerusha in order to be Yotze if your whole Machshav is in terms of Shevet? Gosh, serious sugyas, man. Okay, we need a couple of days of fun discussions. All righty. Go to everybody. Thank you so much. Have a wonderful, wonderful day.